Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
I'm Ben Grace with my sigh after everything I say. Drink, drink.
I'm Dylan Reeve doing the show with a baby on my lap.
Again.
Again.
And I don't think it will make any difference to you because you are that pro.
Damn right.
We are streaming live. Oh, well, what excellent timing. Our guest has just added me on Skype. So let's just see what happens. You guys can fill for a minute, all right?
So, Ben, how's your week been? Did it snow in Takapuna?
It did, I believe. Something drifted down, some icy stuff drifted down and sort of floated and then fell. And I'm going to.
Was that grapple?
It was snow. I'm going to say it's snow. It was icy, soft, icy, floaty stuff coming down from the sky for the first time in 70 years.
Yeah, look, if it floats and it doesn't fall, it's snow, goddammit.
Yeah.
So, should I add him right away and then let's get that done?
Okay. Yeah, go on.
All right.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
I haven't actually got that as a sting on the thing. We've got a guest on Discourse. Hello, Gareth, are you there?
Yeah, hi, how's it going?
It's going excellently well, and we are streaming live. Oh, you better find some headphones or something, because we're getting a little bit of echo.
All right, just give me a sec.
Yeah, well, you've got as many secs as you need.
All the
seconds.
So, should we introduce the guest, Morgan?
This is Gareth Hughes, the youngest current Member of Parliament for the Green Party. I think he came to prominence with the greater nerd population during the debate for the Copyright Amendment Bill, when he was the only person, seemingly in the entire House, our representatives, he was the only person who seemed to know what he was talking about and wasn't just either making stuff up as he went along or outright, you know, lying.
Or parroting company lines.
Yeah. Mm. There's a problem with this call. Hold on while we try to get the call back, period. So, I mean, that was a great introduction, but now he's gone. Oh, wow, we've got a video.
We can see you. We're doing audio, but we like your face, so that's all right.
That's cool. Dylan's got to come back as well at some point. All right. Let's see. What are we doing?
All right, can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, we certainly can. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Perfect.
Do I still have that distortion?
No, it sounds good now.
It's great. Oh. Has Dylan dropped off now, has he?
I don't know.
No, I came back. I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay, excellent.
I was in this weird, dark place for a little while.
Okay.
So, Gareth, are you the youngest sitting Member of Parliament?
No, I'm not. I was until a couple of months ago. Now, Nationals, Jamie Lee Ross is the youngest.
But, Jamie Lee Ross?
I'm still the youngest at heart.
Is he old at heart because he's a National?
Well, he quotes Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan in his speeches, so he's
kind of
the right of the Tea Party.
Is that the guy who looks like a lawnmower salesman?
Yeah, I mean, like a 55-year-old lawnmower salesman.
We should probably let Gareth know that we are going out live as well as recording.
Oh, so. Yes, we are streaming live on the internet to a giant audience of 15 people.
Oh, kia ora, everyone.
Quite a lot more than that, listen, you know,
less than read Reddit, but, you know.
It's more than my public meeting in Tauranga on Friday night, so.
Oh, Tauranga. Well, yeah. Hey, but seriously, you say, who said he was to the right of the Tea Party? Is that even possible in New Zealand politics? I really don't think it is.
I'm probably exaggerating. I mean, I was in the States last year, and it's amazing, sort of, the Republicans are to the right of the National Party in New Zealand. Their whole political centre is just so to the right.
Yeah. I know, and you try explaining that to Americans, and they have no idea. Completely don't comprehend it.
Well, I was introducing myself as a Green MP, and over there, you know, the Green Party barely exists, so they were pretty weirded out that we had Greens in our Parliament.
Yeah, well, it is a little bit weird, to be honest.
If we don't defend MMP, we might be a little bit weirded out in about a generation to have Greens in our Parliament.
Yeah, well, I mean, for my parents growing up, it was, you know, it was only ever Labour or National, and maybe a couple of social creditors on the side. But, I mean, that's why I got into politics, was that it was amazing seeing people like Nandor Tantros in the Parliament. And as an 18-year-old, you know, seeing people that were into the stuff I was into was pretty cool.
So Gareth, Yeah, how did you start with politics? Were you in student politics and that sort of stuff?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I describe myself as a bogan munter growing up in Gisborne. I mean, I really didn't care about politics or green issues at all. But when I moved to Wellington to study at Victoria University, I sort of, what I call, got the biggest idea in the last 50 years, which is that we've only got one planet, it isn't growing, and we don't have anywhere else to go. And if you, you know, if you acknowledge that fact, which is simple common sense, you realize that our whole economy and our whole society is built on infinite growth on a finite planet and disposing of ever-growing wastes like greenhouse gas pollutants, like climate, carbon dioxide, on a finite planet. So I sort of got this big idea and went, whoa, I need to do something about it. Got active with Greenpeace and other environmental groups, and then started working for Jeanette Fitzsimons in Parliament. And then getting up to close with her was amazing. And I thought, well, yeah, maybe I should give it a try being an MP as well. And I was lucky enough to be ranked high enough on the list, so here I am.
What were you studying at university?
I studied religious studies and history.
Oh, okay.
I'm really lucky. I botched my enrollment. I was going to do commerce, but I picked 13 papers in my first semester. And they went, oh, sorry, mate, you're going to have to drop a whole bunch of these papers. So I dropped all the boring, you know, econometrics and stats papers and just started studying religion, which is fascinating. And I'd love to do it again. I've subsequently went and got a postgrad degree in politics as well, just while I was working part-time.
So did you study religion from an agnostic perspective, or were you
I'm a real atheist. I'm quite a committed atheist. Actually, what I studied in depth as part of my degree was UFO cults or flying saucer cults. Not because I believe in flying saucers or anything, but it's a distinctly modern manifestation. You know, you wouldn't have talked about this 100 years ago. But it was exactly the same themes as the established older religions, you know, salvation from on high, people were visiting our planet, special beings. It was the same themes, whether you're a UFO cult believer or a Christian. So I was quite interested in those parallels. I also looked at the evolutionary history of religion, which I found fascinating. And then Buddhism, just because I've traveled a bit in Asia, and I find Buddhism quite interesting as well.
Far out. Oh, we've got a bit of a delay again. Hey, I just wanted to jump all over the place. I mean, I don't know what you want to ask, Gareth. Dylan, but I've got one question, and my only question really is, isn't it really stupidly easy to be completely contrary in when you're in opposition? You can say whatever you want. You can make up all sorts of kooky ideas, but because they're never going to get voted in, you kind of got a carte blanche to go crazy.
I didn't quite catch all of it, but I think the gist was, you know, if you're in opposition, you can come up with heaps of crazy ideas that you don't have to implement. Was that the gist?
Exactly. That was almost word for word.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I guess you could maybe characterise it as that. We've been really different this term of Parliament in the Greens. We're trying to be really financially disciplined with our policies. So in the past, you know, one good example is a universal student allowance. It's a big policy of ours. We think it would benefit it. Basically, the majority of students don't get access to a student allowance because their parents earn too much. Like my partner was in that situation, so she had to get a massive loan, which she's still paying off. So we think a universal student allowance is fairer. But when you do the maths on it, we're talking billions of dollars. Obviously, in the current economic climate, it's pretty hard to do, especially when you've got a whole bunch of other promises. So we've actually been going through all of our policies, doing all the budgets on it, and sort of doing a bit of a priority list. So we're releasing three big election policies over the next coming weeks. We've just launched our plan to get 100,000 Kiwi kids out of poverty, and we have been really disciplined. We're only talking about $400 million to bring 100,000 kids out of poverty. In opposition, you know, we're working hard being financially disciplined.
How does 400 million compare to, say, a motorway?
Not at all. I mean, this government, would you believe it, has more than 19 billion, that's billion with a B, over the next 10 years for new roads and state highways. They've only got $350 million for new public transport infrastructure, you know, buses, trains, cycle lanes, absolutely skewed massively. And,
I meant to say, I've been using the new Hobsonville deviation, which isn't what I do in bed with my wife, but it's the new motorway. And it's actually been getting...
I don't know how the government's doing it. They've literally got a money printing machine for these motorways. There's seven of them, which are costing more than $10 billion.
The government actually does print money.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know. But somehow Stephen Joyce has got this, you know, money printing machine for his roads.
Yeah.
Yet he's got no money for tertiary education.
But I was going to say that Hudsonville deviation is filling up already. It got really busy this morning, and it just breaks my heart. Breaks my heart.
Do you find it weird being in Parliament? Like, it must be strange to be around all those people who have such diametrically odd viewpoints. Do you get on with them personally?
Yeah, on the whole, there's a couple who are sort of hard to get on with, let's put it that way.
You can say Dick. It's okay.
I was going to say Dick, yeah. But, you know, actually, they're all good people. We really disagree on the politics, but I think really in their hearts, they all think they're doing the right thing. Sure, some of them are really stuck in the 1950s, like Stephen Joyce with his motorways. I mean, I'm on the parliamentary rugby team, which is a great way to sort of hang out with them and have a beer after a game. And that's quite a cool way to get to know them. And
what position do you play?
They're all there for the right reasons, if it's a bit misguided.
What position do you play?
I'm a flanker.
Okay. I didn't think you'd be big enough for you to be a flanker.
Yeah, I might migrate to the back line. We're playing a team of diplomats next Monday, so that should be quite cool.
Is that going to be televised? Will that be on the Rugby Channel?
I'm not sure. The Rugby Channel was at our last game at Murupara.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I cracked a rib. That was a really tough team.
That's fantastic. Do you find...
We're going to Parliamentary Rugby World Cup and, next month in Rotorua. MPs from Australia and Canada and Britain are coming down to play us, and we're actually the world champs in the Parliamentary Rugby World Cup, so hopefully we can
fall back on. do you find it weird? Do you find unusual political agreements where you wouldn't expect them? Like, I've seen in the past that occasionally ACT has policy that kind of lines up. I guess some libertarian acts with the Greens. Do you find that occasionally?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think, like, growing up, you know, I was really interested in anarchism as a political philosophy, and there's actually a lot of synergy with libertarianism. I mean, for example, I've got a petition out to keep the drinking age at 18, which I've got with a National member, a Labour member, and an ACT member, so we're all working together across the political spectrum. I mean, ACT has got some policies we'd agree with. I mean, we hate the National government viscerally, you know. We think they're doing shocking things. But we've got a memorandum of understanding with them, and so far 100,000 homes have been insulated over the last 2 years because we worked together on an issue where we could agree. So, you know, all across the house, there's these agreements where we can. We've just signed one on cleaning up toxic waste sites. We've got another one on a more humane and efficient way to kill possums without 1080. I'm also sitting on a committee with Claire Curran from Labor and Nikki Kay from National. And we're trying to work on a project how we can up the sort of tech savviness of MPs and open up our parliament. So we'd like to see, you know, cameras in our select committee rooms. We'd like to see, I'd love to see a big TV screen at the parliamentary gallery. And people can follow the Twitter hashtag feed all the MPs debating, which I think would be quite cool.
This would just be you and Tohenero back and forth.
Yeah, with the odd thing from Claire Curran and Trevor Mallard.
Yeah. I love how functional that is.
I mean, what we saw on that copyright debate was just this embarrassing lack of knowledge of really simple matters by MPs. So that's one thing we're trying to do is get speakers. So we've got Internet New Zealand coming. We've got the Privacy Commissioner coming soon. Just so people get, familiar with some of these terms and what's going on. Because this is where politics is going, eh? I mean... politics is always about being where the people are, be it, you know, a town square or, you know, television in the 70s and 80s. Politics is online now, and so MPs have got to move with the times.
Do you think, is it true that, or is it real that the people in Parliament, like, don't understand the implications of the new legislation, or are they just playing dumb? Like, the thing with not knowing what Netflix was and not understanding that Parliament's internet connection is potentially at risk. Do they not understand it?
Yeah, I think they genuinely don't understand.
It's really worrying.
It is a bit worrying because, you know, Simon Power, when he just offhand dismissed my question around, you know, what are you doing to encourage legal file sharing and downloading like Netflix? You know, Netflix isn't a fringe thing. If you're in the US, you know, they've got, I think, tens of millions of users. And this guy, you know, has just spent, 1,000, 10,000 person hours drafting a bill, researching it, getting submissions, hearing submissions on how to crack down on copyright infringing online. How is this guy not aware what Netflix is? And it's just a general ignorance. Likewise, with that really embarrassing debate in the House when we passed the law under urgency, you know, when MPs were calling it Skynet and stuff, I asked them afterwards, why on earth did you say such embarrassing stuff? You were in the same select committee I was and heard the exact same evidence I did. And they just said, well, look, we didn't think anyone was going to watch, you know, I didn't prepare.
That's the only time I've ever watched television live. I ever watched Parliament television live. Who knows? I wanted to say how fantastically functional I think our government is, which is quite impressive, that we don't do retarded things like just completely stop and filibuster each other for no genuinely good reason.
Yeah. I've got a couple of questions, not about filibustering. I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt and get my things out of the way.
Go.
Now, something I've noticed, well, something I think I've noticed around previous elections, Gareth, is that the kind of the insane fringe of the party gets really vocal around election time. And what are you going to do to keep the mental cases stum?
Of the Green Party or just politics in general?
Well, I'm sure of politics in general, but I've noticed it in the Green Party.
Yeah, well, I support all our candidates across the country. We've probably got about 80. So I think the difference is, you know, outside of election year, you only really hear from the MPs. Now there's 9 of us, so
yeah.
We all hang out, you know. We've got key messages, which we, you know, we hear from each other what we're talking about. But when you go to the election, you know, you've got people out in the country who, you know, aren't in this environment. So, you know, I'm really privileged because I get to see all this information coming across my desk every day about all the issues facing us, all the legislation happening. Whereas, you know, a member standing in the Northland, say, or East Coast, isn't aware of that. So
yeah.
I think that's the difference. But we've got some colourful characters standing for us. We've got a good vetting process.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone who wants to stand for us doesn't. We do turn people away. But, you know, we've got a pretty amazing set of characters standing for us. And I think, you know, if we did get 20 MPs, which, you know, I'd love to see over the next few terms, we've got some pretty quality candidates.
Sorry, Ben's trying to ask me something.
No, that's fine, all right. What was your next question?
Oh, my next question is kind of related to that. Some people think that the Greens are Luddites, but I think that the future of protecting our environment while also maintaining something resembling our current standard of living is higher technology. And I believe some Greens also agree with that. So this is more sophisticated electricity generation, more sophisticated transport and so
more
on.
Power usage.
Yeah,
things.
Different...
Yeah,
right.
What I love about green politics is we're not old-fashioned and we're not wedded to, you know, old political philosophy ideas. I mean, we're a distinctly modern movement, and what we've done is we've picked the best from right-wing, you know, more conservative politics. So, you know, we do like the idea of, you know, conserving energy, conserving good ideas. But we also pick some ideas from, you know, traditionally right-wing politics, so using the power of market to influence, you know, outcomes out in the world. Also, we've picked stuff from traditional left-wing politics, you know, the role of the state as an actor in the economy, trying to rub out the sort of economic cycles. So what we've done is we've picked different things, and I think we've taken some things of the traditional back-to-nature movement, but we've also adopted really modern technological solutions as well. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, looking at the future of the New Zealand economy, I think that clean tech sector is going to be vitally important because we're not going to compete with China, you know, trying to destroy our environment faster than they can, which is what we're trying to do at the moment with massive dairy intensification. Michael. We just can't beat China or Uruguay at making more cows on our land. What we can do, though, is corner the market on niche, high-value, high-technological, high-skilled products. Professor Paul Callaghan, the New Zealander of the Year, has got a wonderful presentation.
Oh, no!
TV or cars.
Oh, he's back.
What we can do, though, is like Fisher & Paykel at the moment, they've cornered the market on sleep apnea devices. You know, it's just not worthwhile for other countries to try and corner the market. But because we're so small, we can actually corner one particular market on sleep apnea devices. And I reckon we should try and do it on, you know, clean tech devices. And really leverage that 100% pure, clean, green brand which is just so valuable.
Or do you? I mean, the other thing is Bernard Hickey's catch call is that we need to, you know, do need to be more austere and maybe make less money and have less stuff. Do you think that the Greens are getting that message across enough? You know, it's sort of. Yeah.
It's a hard one because, you know, some people just don't have enough in New Zealand, and we can't forget about, you know, those 100,000 kids in poverty who, you know, don't have breakfast when they go to school. So when you have a discussion about using less, you've got to remember some people are in abject poverty. But on the whole, in New Zealand, we're a vastly consumeristic society. We use way more than we need, and actually we're using more than our fair share globally. So, you know, look at climate change. We're the fifth highest per polluter per capita in the OECD. So you always hear it from a government, be it National or Labour. Look, you know, it's not a big deal. We're only, you know, 0.064%, 0.2% of the world's climate change problem. And it's true, you know, we're a small part. We could disappear tomorrow and it wouldn't change climate change. But when you look at our percentage of the world population, which is 0.064, you see that actually we're using a significantly greater share than what we're entitled to.
We need to do, you know, better,
we use a fifth more than Chinese, 20 times more than the average African. We need to do more with less.
100% pure New Zealand, we should be top polluter, surely. 100%.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you believe the rhetoric. And, I mean, it's a serious thing, you know. We've got 80,000 tourists coming to New Zealand for the Cup next month, 1 billion people watching us on TV, and I'm pretty convinced these journalists, you know, they're not going to be covering rugby 24-7.
No, they're going to be covering sheet at Queen Street.
Yeah, I mean, what is the other stories they're going to cover? I think some of them are going to cover the sort of clean green scam that we're running.
So, for the Green Party, I mean, to be honest, you personally have probably changed a party vote at least to the Green Party this year, simply from your copyright stance, the way you dealt with that discussion. But while I seem to, well, I think I agree with the Green Party on a lot of things, there always seems to be perhaps some issues, maybe environmental or, like Morgan was saying, the more, slightly more fringe elements. Do you think that hurts you as a party? Like, you've got a lot of broad appeal, and then there's a few things that just seem a bit freaky to some people.
I mean, it's really interesting. I often find that I meet people out in the streets who go, you know, I love, you know, 99% of what you guys did, but it's that Nandor Tanchos really put me off, or then it was that Sue Bradford really put me off, or that shower flow head thing that became an issue last election, that put me off. But people seem to give, like, National and Labour, you know, a million chances to do bad, and they say, I hate this, that about Labour. But they still vote it. So it's weird that we've got a double standard. But, you know, I acknowledge it. You know, we're a medium party. We're still sort of growing. Maybe people don't trust us yet. We've achieved an awful lot in our, what, nearly 15 years in Parliament. But we've never actually been in government yet. So I think people are still wanting to see us in a more mature, responsible role. And I think we've put a lot of work into that over the last couple of years that I've been in Parliament anyway, a year and a half. Is that we're being, you know, more financially responsible, we're talking economics more, which is something a lot of people vote on. You know, we're being a lot more sort of disciplined in our messages and our communications. So hopefully, you know, people will see us more as the way of the future, you know, trying to reflect their values and what their vision for New Zealand is. So hopefully, you know, we're doing better, is all I can say.
Well, there's also the issue of if you do get into Parliament, hasn't every minority party completely self-imploded, self-destructed when they've been in Parliament, in government?
I didn't quite catch that, I'm sorry.
Hasn't every minority party in government previously, New Zealand First, currently ACT, are kind of self-decimating, haven't they all imploded?
Yeah, every single minor party that's gone into a coalition with the government has imploded. New Zealand First, the Alliance, United Futures,
the Alliance,
ACT disappeared. So we've been sort of blessed or cursed, depending how you look at it, by never sort of being kissed by the big party. But actually, I mean, check out our website because we've got a massive list of achievements. And what we've shown is under MMP, you know, is a different way of thinking about governing the country. It's not all about confidence and supply and ministerial limos. We've achieved a whole bunch with the Nats, who we hate, but that's great that we have. We achieved a whole bunch with Labour, even though they prefer to go with Winston Peters than us. So we've sort of pioneered these new constitutional ideas of what governance actually is, and that's really a good thing. And that's what I think a lot of people, is one of the reasons why they'll vote for an MP, you know, it's meant we've got a more flexible politics in New Zealand, which is good, because what we're seeing in Canada and the US is these really inflexible old political systems are breaking down and not reflecting what the public wants. So that's the good thing about MMP.
Something else I would... This is not related to MMP, I'm sorry. We're going to talk about MMP, I think, a lot as we get closer to that. I want to know why Parliament acts like a bunch of rowdy, spoiled children. And is there anything that can be done to improve the standard of behaviour in the House? Or is there the booing and the shouting? Is it something we just have to deal with?
It's a really good question. And in my year and a half here, I still haven't worked out what the answer is. I mean, is it because we've got TV cameras in the debating chamber? I hope not, because I'd actually love to see TV cameras in our select committees as well, because that's where most of the really good work, the constructive work, MPs working together actually happens. But my fear is, of course, if we put a TV camera in the select committee rooms, you'd get all the MPs acting like kindergarten kids again and trying to score points and this tribal battle thing happening again. I don't know if Parliament's always been this way. I think it's also a legacy of our old politics under First Past the Post, where you had the blue team, Coke, the green, the red team, Pepsi. And that was the battle between Coke and Pepsi, red and blue. What MMPs meant is we've got more parties in Parliament. So politics is a lot more sort of consultative and slow, which is a good thing. But, I mean, one classic example, there's a really boring committee which no one in the public will ever hear about, called the Standing Orders Committee, which meets and discusses the rules of Parliament. We've gone to the committee, we've corresponded with it, as you do in Parliament. We had 26 really good recommendations to actually lift the tenor of Parliament and make it more constructive and open. All of them got reduced. We got one through. We changed a word succinct to terse. No, the other way around. That was the only change we got. And it's because Coke and Pepsi want to keep their power games, that tribal battle happening in Parliament, that petty point scoring. It's a real shame, and I think that's why we need more people to tune in and to watch Parliament and engage with MPs live.
I think that's
why Twitter's amazing. You can send a message to an MP while they're debating and tell them what you think about it. That's an amazing new technology, which I believe will really change our politics.
Well, that point you said about the guys who were, horribly uninformed on the whole Skynet law, I think, the point you made about they didn't realise they were going to be watched. If they realise they're going to be watched, then hopefully everyone will lift their standards a bit.
And it becomes a game. I mean, to be frank, for, tune into Parliament now, we're just about to go into urgency. I think we're about to debate the Freedom Camping Bill. Most of these MPs would have done really minimal research on it. And for them, it's a bit of a game, like, who can do the longest, funniest speech, obviously not knowing the background to it. It's funny for an MP, but, it's not funny for the public watching it.
Yeah. And then it means their position just comes down to ideology or whatever the party line is, I presume.
Yeah, and that's the great thing. I mean, I really feel privileged about being in the Green Party that I've actually got a say on everything. It's not the leader telling me what to say on a bill. I debate it. We had our caucus meeting today, so every Tuesday when the House sits, we have caucus for half today. And that's where we decide everything we do with how we're voting, what we're saying about different topical issues, how we're relating to other parties in Parliament. And, as a backbencher MP, which is what I am in a minor party, I've actually got a say on everything that happens, which is cool. Because it means I'm actually going to go debate the Freedom Camping Bill in 5 minutes. So, I've had a say in it, so I'm going to feel passionate and hopefully a bit more informed about it when I debate it.
Gareth, when are you going to take over the leadership?
Well, I think Russell and Matt are doing a pretty good job, so... I've got no plans.
All right, we'll back you in the coup, though.
Hey, I've just got one closing question.
We need to play Word of the Week if he's got to go and sit in urgency. Come on.
That's a good point. I do have one other question, though, that's just around the whole, given that copyright file sharing infringement bill notices or whatever have come into play. Notices come into play soon. What do you think is actually going to have any effect at all? And it, given that box office revenues are at records, TV advertising is at records, UK box office grew 8% last year. Oh, sorry, UK music revenues grew 8% last year. Do you think it's going to really help those things kick on even more and grow more box office revenue?
Well, it's not going to have an effect on reducing illegitimate infringing online of illegal files. I mean, that it's just not going to do it. Because those serious offenders, those who are doing it big time, they know how to get around this already. And they already know what to do to circumvent it. What it is going to have an impact on is flats who aren't aware of the law, you know, a small business, a town library, where someone, you know, is sharing files illegally online, it's going to be the account holder who gets busted.
That's a very relevant point. Would you have any idea who posted on Twitter about downloading from the Parliamentary Services internet account?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have a clue. But it shows what a farce it is. And the other impact of this law is going to be that Parliament has been discredited. You know, the legislation, which everyone was really sceptical about already because of the way Labour went about it 3 years ago, the fact it was under urgency, the fact it was a laughable debate. Everyone's sceptical of this law. Look at the WikiLeaks cables that showed the US government was passing $500,000 to New Zealand, probably Rian's, probably NZ Fact, is what people are saying. So there's all the scepticism around it already. And I think a lot of people realize that, look, this isn't actually about a right and wrong issue. This isn't a criminal issue. What it is about is propping up a traditional, very lucrative business model for a few very large companies. Because as I asked Simon Powell last week, the most effective way we could be reducing illegal file sharing and seeing artists paid a fair wage for their work is to encourage new business models of legal file sharing. And the government's put no effort, yep, no resources into that whatsoever. So the impact is going to be, you know, it's a bad law that won't work, that's ruined the credibility of Parliament on copyright issues when we should have gone a total different tack.
All right. I'd like to talk about that a great deal more, but we have to let you go. But before we let you go, there's a game that we play with all of our guests called
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
And this game involves me giving you a word from Urban Dictionary, and you and all of the co-hosts will try and come up with the definition as specified on Urban Dictionary, without looking it up, of course. I don't imagine you've probably listened to the show, but you'll have to, I don't know, hit the ground running.
Does Urban Dictionary have a special type of defining words?
Yeah, it's urban slang. Different.
Yeah, basically anyone can add a word and add a definition. So a lot of them are, you know, pranky ones insulting their personal friends. But this one isn't one of those. So there's lots of really strange phrases and words and lots of really kind of internet-y phrases and quite meta stuff and quite meme-y stuff. And then people vote on them. And so you get upvotes and downvotes. And that's a way of roughly judging the quality of a word. This phrase has 3,100 upvotes and 3,000 downvotes. So, you know, it's hard to say whether it's a good or bad one. But your word, Gareth, is election erection.
What Jerry Brownlee got when he heard about the election date?
Dylan?
I think he's close there. I think maybe he's got... Is it... I was thinking maybe something to do with news gathering, what news organisations or news managers get as the election draws close and they realise all the ridiculous coverage can be ramped up.
I'm going
to
go slightly.
I think it's that day, you know, when you're allowed to put your billboards up.
I was going to say that. Erection. I was going to come up with stats. It is election hoardings. It's another name for a hoarding.
You're all wrong.
The correct definition, according to Urban Dictionary, is the general euphoria experienced when your candidate of choice wins by a landslide.
Oh. Right. Well, we look forward to a landslide for you. Are you standing in a electorate, or are you just a List MP? I say just a List MP.
Will I get into Parliament on the list, like all the Greens do, because we passed that 5% threshold? But yep. I am standing in a seat, Ahariu. That's Northwest Wellington, where I stood last election, up against Peter Dunn. So I'm only asking people to give me their party vote because that's going to see me back in Parliament.
All right.
That's how all the Greens are across all the country.
And I understand that you've actually been moved up the Green list by several rankings. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'm number 7 on our current list. That's ranked by our members, and we also adjust it for gender and geographic and ethnicity and age balance. So, yeah, I'm really stoked with my list ranking. I've got a really good chance of being back in Parliament, so as long as we cross that 5% threshold, which I'm pretty confident we will.
So you just need 5% for you to be back in, or do you need 7 or 10?
Yeah, so there's two ways a party can get into Parliament.
Sorry, you know, I know that.
Like Rodney Hyde, you get on the coattails if you win a seat, or if you cross the 5% threshold, which is what the Greens have always done.
How many will you get if you only beat 5%?
Medium political party now.
Yeah, but what percentage do you need to get number 7 in?
About like 5% should see me in anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm sure you'll make that. All right, thank you so much for joining us this week, Gareth. It's been really good talking to you. Unfortunately, there's been a few audio problems, but the listeners will just have to deal with that and suck it up.
Hey, wonderful to chat to you guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, Gareth.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Yada, bye.
And suddenly, the audio is so clean.
that must be a problem with the Wi-Fi in Parliament, perhaps.
We've had bad luck talking to people in Wellington, man. Do you remember how bad David Farrell was? My God.
Was that the sound of the snow we just heard, though?
Probably the snow, but I think it was Gareth's laptop speakers feeding back into his laptop mic, unfortunately. But hopefully, I think what you were saying on the feedback was you could hear him with all his party messages and well-formed speech. So
it was just us with our little questions that were echoing. There will be... now, I've kind of sworn not to edit the show, but I did pause... the real-time maker thing. So we'll see. There might be a small edit in there somewhere. Hopefully it won't be all confusing and weird. Listeners.
Now, here's the thing, though. We've just spoken to a Green MP at reasonable length about the Green Party. Do we have to now get everyone else on as well?
I think we should try to.
To be fair and balanced.
Are we obligated to?
Well, that's not our first candidate, though. Spoke to candidate for Auckland Central, Hambeast. What's her name?
Liz Shaw.
Liz Shaw, that's it.
Remember, this November 20th, is it 27th? This November 27th, tick Hambeast Auckland Central.
Hambeast for Auckland Central.
Oh, dear.
I wonder if it was a tweet that someone I saw retweeted of her the other day.
Hambeast.
What are the listeners saying about...
They're saying that the sound is really crap in Mixlr, and I'm sure that the sound is crap in Mixlr. It's all clippy and junky and loud. And weird. And so this might be the last week we try Mixlr. We'll see. If we don't have time, it's really, I mean, I've got to tell you, listeners, it's hard to find the time to do all the stuff that we do with Discourse as it is, let alone coming up with, big changes each week. So, I mean, I'm quite enjoying doing the live streams and just having a little bit of input from the chat room. But Mixlr maybe isn't it. And the software for Mixlr is so bad. It's unbelievably bad. The reason that the audio sounds really, really junk is, I mean, there's no control over it in the client. It just sends whatever it sends, and I don't know how to tweak the levels in it or do anything to it. I mean, there is no way. There is no way. It's not in the interface. It's been simplified and cleanified and kind of Appleified, and that makes it useless. All right, so let's get on with the show. Okay, so we probably are going to announce a winner for the Motorola Defy Destruction Competition, or are we going to talk about a couple of favourites before we do that?
There's a couple of good ones in there. Excuse me for yawning. I'm going to give you my couple of favourites.
Yep.
Let me just bring it up if I can. Like if I can get it up. I always have trouble getting it up.
Is that your election erection?
Oh, Dylan.
I like...
big butts and I cannot lie.
I do kind of like the petrol. So what we asked them for is three words, the object in three words. One was my PC screen, keyboard, mouse and modem.
Yeah.
And the doing was petrol, lighter and fire.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that a PC would just kind of, you could almost probably turn it back on again after.
Yeah, just about.
After lighting it on fire with petrol.
The screen might not like it very much. what else have we got? We've got... Facebook. Someone is going to take down Facebook with a DDoS hack attack using their anonymous army from 4chan. Unfortunately, that can only happen outside the deadline for the competition. At the Morgan on Twitter, your entry. I think you missed the point a little bit there, champ.
Yeah, Morgan.
But thanks for listening.
Someone's got a shotgun. MP3.
Oh my god, a shotgun! I hope they're destroying something really good.
MP3 player and a pair of binoculars. An old Samsung MP3 player and a pair of binoculars.
If they got a milk bottle with petrol in it and a road flare and this shitty MP3 player that I don't care about and shot those on camera, that would have to be way up my list.
That would be a lot better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I just think the value of proposition.
I don't care about an MP3, a Samsung MP3 player.
However,
yeah.
What about a Samsung Galaxy S? Isn't that one of the top end phones at the moment, Dylan?
Don't destroy that. And
Android fan Dylan Reeve, is a Samsung Galaxy S a good Android?
Is it a Is he seriously talking about a Galaxy?
He's talking about a Galaxy S. It's not an S2, which I think is the latest Samsung Galaxy.
Yeah. No, it's a pretty nice phone. So this is Aaron Gillen. He says he's going to construct a large slingshot to fire the phone into a brick wall, perhaps decorated with a Vodafone logo. We could call it a coverage dead spot.
I don't believe for even a fraction of a second that he's really going to do this.
The Galaxy S, can you just go to Vodafone.co.nz and tell me how much the Galaxy S is currently selling for?
I think, because I'm not sure, but I think the Galaxy S would probably typically be rated as a higher performance phone than the Defy. But the Defy is water resistant. So, you know, I don't know if, and it's also apparently reasonably shock resistant, has Gorilla Glass screen, but I'm not sure it would survive being shot at a wall.
What happens if it bounces off the wall and survives intact? That's not destruction, is it? The competition states destruction.
Look, if you shoot the phone, if you drop the phone from like halfway up your body, like 3 feet high onto concrete, it'll probably break. I think shooting it at a wall at any sort of velocity that would make it hit the wall is probably going to suitably destroy it.
Should we get a show of hands from the discourse? Have we got the chat room going?
Yeah.
What is the chat room saying? Sorry, I can't review the chat room on this.
Hello, chat room. Can you please tell us which of those options you favour to destroy? We'll have to give them probably 30 seconds because I think that they're quite a bit behind us in audio. Yeah. It's got a buffer through.
I'm just going to offer a couple more that are in here.
So I just tried to go to Vodafone.co.nz. I got a 500 server error.
I'm just going to offer a couple more. There's one in here. Someone in here wants to destroy a printer, which they want to hit with a baseball bat. Which I have.
It's very Office Space.
Yeah, I quite like that. In slow motion with, what's the song? Some gangster.
All right. Gangster rap Someone song. Else has suggested their current mobile, a Nokia N95. Now, you can't destroy that. It needs to go into a computer history museum.
What are you talking about? An N95 is not a shortage of those.
No, but they wanted to take an N95 and slowly burn it with a candle, which is quite cool.
I quite like the sound of that. A time lapse of that might be cool.
Yeah.
Someone has offered to destroy one of their wisdom teeth with amateur dentistry. It says, in this scenario, I would use a Dremel-style rotary hobby tool as an improvised dental drill to disintegrate one of my upper third molars.
It was going really, really well until we got to the end of it.
Full disclosure, the tooth will not be in my head at the time.
A fail.
Yeah, right up until then, I was like, oh my God.
All right, well, I think that we haven't had a great deal of votes in the chat room, but they seem to be agreeing on the slingshot Galaxy. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I think we should nominate it because it's ambitious. It's valuable.
There's also someone wants to burn their Asus EE PC.
Oh, what's that worth? About $50.
Yeah, I've got one. I don't think it's even worth that. They were cheap when they were new.
You just burn your one anyway.
They were cheap when they were new, and they were new like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Who knows what? All right. So Aaron Gillen. I don't know. Have we got a Twitter name for him? I don't think we've got a Twitter.
He does not seem to have the Twitter.
If you do it and record it,
a potential winner is you.
A potential winner is you.
Well, no, winner.
But if you're messing around.
And I made a point that if there's any jump cuts in that video, it's an instant fail. So if you fire it, you know, at a pillow out of shot and then jump cut to something else smashing into a wall,
then no.
No.
No, absolutely not.
We need to see evidence that it's the same Galaxy S. Do we want to see it working? No, he doesn't state that it has to be working before he does it.
We haven't. No, that's right. It's just
it may not be working.
Extra points. Extra points if you can show it turning on before you do it.
Yeah, he's not going to do it. I'm absolutely sure he's not going to do it.
He's got till what? Next Tuesday, the 20... Oh, God, I can't do maths.
23rd.
Email straight up to the show and then, yeah.
Yeah, so he's got until next Tuesday, the 23rd, about 7 p.m. to send us evidence, proof of death.
Yeah, and I think it's got to be video because, I mean, I want to see it actually happen.
Yep.
And like Ferg_NZ in the chat room just said, make sure it's not a dummy one from the shop. Yeah, because, I mean, that wouldn't be a Galaxy S.
That's true. So even if it's not working, we need to see that it's a real phone.
Yeah, you've got to open the back or something. You've got to show us that it's a real one. Even if it's, I don't know, even if it's broken, it's got to be a real one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. What's next?
I don't know. I've got a sleeping baby. It looks like an old man.
Not a squeaky hammer. We only got 15 minutes to go. We're going to do fast fives?
45 minutes.
Fast fives. Or do we want to flow those into the overflow? I don't think we can do those in this time. And oh, maybe we can. I don't think any of us actually has five.
No.
I don't even have... I have one.
Okay, do fast one. Dylan, go.
One.
Just wait. Fill time. Five. Pad.
Fast five.
Pad.
Padding.
Just say one along. Okay.
One.
I have two. One's been nuked. One was. Did you see the This. Oh, this is. I'm going to do them all in one, so you can just deal with it. Did you see the video of the people in Cuba Street dancing in the snow?
Yes.
It was very pretty. Very nice. Liked it a lot.
On Vimeo.
The Herald posted it on their website. And of course, when the Herald posts videos on their website, they don't link. They just put them in their own player and make them look like shit. I asked the Herald if they had permission, and apparently they did. But okay. It's because the media tends to just take things.
Yeah.
And put them online. They take photos and they maybe sometimes credit the person who made it, but anyway. The other thing is just there's no such thing as vegan, which isn't really news, I suppose. But
it's
I just
also
saw it today.
Bullshit.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's basically a diagram that theoretically purports to demonstrate that the body of an animal, specifically a cow in this case, gets used in so many varietous ways that you can't really avoid consuming.
But the thing is that the body of a cow is not the only source for any of those things.
Indeed, but I guess it's you'd have to be you would have to go hugely out of your way to not to live in our environment without profiting or benefiting from the death of animals.
So what's your point, and why would you say that to a vegan, Dylan?
I wouldn't necessarily. It was just interesting because
vegans.
Yeah, damn
yeah,
vegans.
In your face for having, you know, the courage of your convictions and trying to minimize the harm that you do to the animals in the world. In your face. Why would you be such good people, eh, vegans?
Yeah,
what's
right.
wrong with you that you're so empathic and caring?
Eat a fucking steak.
Done.
I think that's complete bullshit, and I think that vegans already know that there are animal source components in a whole lot of products, and they go out of their way to avoid them as much as they reasonably can.
Got three, and I'm going to speak in 3 minutes and no more because we're getting running out of time.
Three.
Snowmageddon.
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 Snowmageddon. Snowmageddon.
Isn't it great? Just the vibe on Twitter this week has been so lovely. It's almost brought me to tears sometimes. Just people squealing with delight.
Cry, but there was baby, Ben.
Fucking Auckland hate came up again.
No.
Yes, seriously. I why do they do that?
Just ignore
We're
it.
Just playing, talking about, you know, this really uncommon thing.
It's so uncommon.
And they're like, where, it's hardly snowing at all. Yeah,
snow.
No shit, it's hardly snowing at all. Our discussion with ourselves was whether it was snowing at all. No one said, oh my God, we're all going to be cold.
So true. We're all saying, is it snow? Is it snow? That's snow. Oh my God, is it snow?
And the exact same thing as we had with that little tiny earthquake.
Yeah, was that an earthquake? Was that wind? I don't know.
God, oh my God, damn it, New Zealand. We are such a small country.
Love each other.
We've just got to be buddies. Sorry, I didn't mean to stand.
We love you.
Three, go.
Three.
Two.
Whoops. Scientists lose the fastest plane ever built.
Oh my God, how could they? What's the fastest plane ever built? Like Mark 3, Mark 4?
This was like DARPA, was it? Doing hypersonic gliders.
Hypersonic, so it's like Mark 5.
20,000 kilometres an hour. So that's
20,000.
Isn't it Mark 10 or something? I don't know. Stupid fast.
But I didn't know anything could even go that fast.
How is it different to a missile?
I think it's faster.
I haven't read the article, so I'm just making it up.
Yeah, I put this on your list.
What was the point? B, they lost it. Does that mean it's like gone firing off into orbit, or is it going to crash down on our heads any minute now?
It's crashed into the sea.
Probably, it's probably disintegrated because it was going too fast.
That's probably right.
There's probably all sorts of weird aerodynamic effects that happen at that speed, like
melting.
Melting and what's the other one? Mark Tuck.
Mark Tuck.
Mark Tuck. Do a shockwave on your aerodynamic surface. I know that. I've got to stop talking.
You've got to stop talking, Ben.
One.
Motorola buys Google. Google buys Motorola.
Reverse takeover.
Motorola Mobility for $12.5 billion.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's hugely polarizing. There's people saying it's great. There's people saying it's bad. The funny thing is, I think the most salient thing I read was from Apple fanboy, Android hater Gruber,
yeah.
John Gruber.
Yeah.
And I forgot what I was going to say now. It's terrible. That the funny thing was how recently the rumors came out about Motorola going to sue other Android manufacturers for their patents.
Yeah.
The theory is that that was the Carl Icahn, who's a well-known kind of investor, and the CEO of Motorola talking it up to get Google to raise their price.
Right.
Which is pretty dodge, surely.
Well.
All's fair in business and war.
Yeah.
Leighton Duncan in the chat room, known Apple guy. Google panic buy. Google panic buy.
Google panic buy after Nortel, apparently.
And I think that could be true. I've heard that maybe they've only been negotiating for about 5 weeks to make this acquisition, extraordinarily quick.
Again, patents may suck. Software patents, probably a lot of them, most of them, all of them do suck. No matter what you think about that, the current modus operandi is that you have to have an arsenal to defend yourself, and Google was running pretty thin on the ground and were getting pretty hammered over and over again. So, in order to make Android work, they had to come out and say, we will support Android people.
Well, and they also want to get themselves into the position where they have, Microsoft, Apple come to them and say, we've got this patent. They can go, well, we've got this patent.
We've got these.
So let's just call it quits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's all about the patents. They bought something over 20,000 mobile patents, right?
7,000.
And Motorola's been in the mobile business for, did they start it?
They had the first mobile radio telephone thing.
StarTech.
Yeah, no, that's way earlier than the StarTech.
Yeah, no.
They had the luggable, the big briefcase one. Yeah. I don't know how many stories I'm actually going to do, but let's start with...
Three.
Basically, world, if you try to criticise the haka, if you try and get the haka banned, you will get fucked. Your rugby team will be demolished. The Wallabies turned their backs on the haka in 1996 in Wellington. All Blacks win 43-6. You see, basically every time any other country, usually it's Australia that have been crybabies, and this is all really from an article, Ban It, Cry of the Aussie Loser, on New Zealand Herald. Welsh Rugby Union insists the haka be performed before the Welsh anthem in 2006. I think we all remember this well. The All Blacks said, nah. And instead they did it in the dressing room, not on the field. All Blacks win, 45-10. Do you want more examples? I can give you more examples.
That's all right. That's good. You've still got time. While you've got time, I'm going to add another story in really quickly. The running of the sheep in Queen Street has been cancelled.
Oh, thank God for that.
Why would it be cancelled? It sounds exciting.
SPCA.
What did they have to say?
They said it was possibly cruel to sheep for using them as entertainment, and the organisers said, we don't want to have a debate, so fuck it, we'll cancel
it. It's not cruel to sheep to cut their throats, bleed them out, and then cut the muscles off their bodies to eat.
No, that's not cruel. That's tasty.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I had this clear with the SPCA. What's my next one? I haven't even chosen one.
God, you put like 700 in the list. So
I know. Police investigation clears TVNZ for their story about Ari Smith-Vorkamp, who is the Asperger's kid who has a compulsion to collect light fittings. He had broken into an earthquake damaged shop and was removing lights when the police caught him, beat the fucking shit out of him. Let's not forget that it was the police that did that. And then when TVNZ wanted to do a story about it on Sunday, and they spoke to the owners of the shop who said, we didn't even know that he had been there. No one's spoken to us about this at all. Why are the police even kept taking this action? And we would have done nothing because the place is destroyed and was already a wreck even before the earthquake happened. The police said, basically threaten. If you run the story, it's at your peril.
Journalists, far out.
Exactly. And now they've dropped the charges. They've said, we're not going to
continue
with this.
They couldn't even describe what the charge might be.
No, that's right. That's because they were just being egotistical bullies.
There's so much worse about that case. Russell Brown's got such good coverage of it, or such good insight into it on his site, but it's...
I want to say, fuck some police.
One.
But yeah, some police.
One.
My last story, this is probably something we should talk about in Overflow. This is the XKCD password thing. Basically, we have been trained into creating passwords that are very hard for people to remember and very easy for computers to crack. If you look at xkcd.com/936, it kind of describes it. XKCD, what's his name?
Randall
Monroe?
Yes.
His suggestion is actually that four uncommon but easily memorable English words spelled out normally with no substitutions probably is actually quite a lot harder for a computer to guess, much easier for a human to remember than any of the passwords that we have been forced to use. Judging by Gibson Research Corporation, they've got a little application called How Big Is Your Haystack? And you can put any password in that you want, and it figures out the search space, and it tries to give you an estimate of how long it will take to attack it with an online attack, with like sending passwords to like a website or whatever, or a server. An offline attack where they have like a password file, and also a massive cracking array. And it makes it very clear if you input these, you know, Randall Munro's suggested type of passwords into there, that he's completely right. These quite easy to remember, but quite long passwords are vastly stronger than, you know, the 8 or 10 character uppercase numbers and some punctuation passwords. Vastly harder to crack.
I'll try and find it for the show notes, but I read an entire article about that and it went deeply into the maths. And yeah, absolutely. Choose a few English words, normally spelt with normal punctuation.
Yep.
And yeah, it becomes ridiculously difficult.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculously difficult. And I think that's the last story I want to do. Okay, I think that we actually have a sponsor. And now, a word from our sponsor. Do you want people to see a Canadian, Swedish, French, English, American or Russian IP address when they look at you on the internet for some reason? Do you want to be able to stream Hulu or BBC iPlayer even though you don't live in America or the UK? Do you want to have your anonymity protected on the internet because maybe you're shy or just don't want people tracking your shit when you're trying to mind your own business? If that is you, then go to discourse.co.nz/VPN and sign up. Go and do it now. Your auntie would love you for it.
And it'll help us out a little bit.
It'll help us out a tiny bit.
Oh, very devious.
Uh-huh.
I mean sensible.
Yes. And we appreciate the support of Pure VPN in providing that service. So what have we still got time for? We've got about 3 minutes. And have we got a toot bag?
Toot bag.
I haven't got a toot bag.
What's in the toot bag?
Does someone want to come up with a toot bag while I do corrections? Corrections. Actually, I'll do...
What's your auntie been talking about?
I suggest you check out an English show. Is it BBC? I don't remember if it's BBC. It's called Strike Back, and it's about, you know, one of these... It's something that the English seem to quite like doing. It's the small team kind of spook people. They've got Special Forces soldiers. Season one was a guy who... I don't want to give you spoilers. Season two is looking even stronger. It's only about six episode seasons, and it's about basically tiny teams who fight back against terrorists directly. You know, it's fun.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.
Toot bag.
Let's open up the toot bag.
1 hour ago, Dylan Reeves said, listen live to @DiscourseNZ.
I did say that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so cool that I tweeted that and you just read it out on air.
Do you know who has actually responded to the toot bag?
Who's that?
A company called Urgent Couriers. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
So Dylan Reeve said, crap, forgot this. So this is for @Talon, who won the phone last week.
Congratulations, Gary.
4 days ago, Dylan Reeve said, crap, forgot to get a courier bag to send Talon the phone he won from Discourse NZ. It's coming, I promise. And then he said, maybe we should get @UrgentCouriers to sponsor the prize delivery. How quickly did they reply?
5-10 minutes. We got it all sorted out over the Twitter with a DM or two. We got the phone delivered to Gary that afternoon.
That's so cool.
Urgent Couriers says @DylanReeve, I could do a 3-hour service for you if you like. Smiley face. Smiley face right back at you, Urgent Couriers.
Excellently done. We've got a few little ones. NZ Raj, friend of the show. Yes, another podcast of Tasty Discourse. Show on iTunes. Download now. Agreed. Every week. Download whenever. Rich Irvine. What's that? That's 1 minute.
Oh, my God.
1 minute.
Rich Irvine says, no overflow this week. Did your special guest show up? Our special guest did not show up, but hopefully we'll be here next week, and that is Paul Brislin. We had no overflow because, I mean, we were going to do it. We had a lot to talk about, but Skype disconnected, and I was like, flag it.
Yeah, no, I baby woke up, you know, all that parenting stuff.
All right, corrections. Dylan used a racial slur last week, which we regret. Jipping, it was not his choice of words. It was from an article. We know that it's a slur. I don't know. I guess we regret it. Dylan probably doesn't give a shit.
No, I don't give a shit.
I apologize. Yeah, because, you know, who cares about gypsies?
Right. I know, and they've got a whole.
The Nazis did shovel them into ovens. Big Brother, very creepy. Very sorry about that. Oh, we're running really short.
Crying Baby was too long.
Three.
Yeah, Crying Baby was way too long. I didn't mean it to be so long, but two. I got distracted by things on the internet.
We love you, Telecom. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Telecom. Bye. Bye.
Back up your stuff.
I'll just go in a minute.
You're listening to the weekly show on Sorry. Of course.
Right. We're using that one.
Tune in right now for the Extra Large Extended Edition, available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.